Taking aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. You've been listening to an excerpt that we taped, and today we're coming to you on the telephone for this special 3-hour program during the WBAI Fund Drive. We're glad to be with all of you in the New York region, in the tri-state region of New York. Many of the people who listen to us on the internet are having problems today with the server. So especially all of you listening by radio in the New York area, we're hoping that today is the moment, this is the moment that you make your special contribution to WBAI. We mentioned before the phone number and hope you took it down, but if you didn't, it's 212-209-2950. The premium for the Taking Aim program is a very special lecture that Ralph did at Seton Hall on October 31st of 2002. U.S. State Terror, 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War. And in the program, of which we're going to play part of during the coming time remaining for this 3 hours, you will hear Ralph tie together the current assault in New York with the events of 9/11 and how this all sets the stage for permanent war against the people of the United States and the people of the world. Again, it's 212-209-2950. We at Taking Aim have a special gift for all of you. The premium, the U.S. State Terror, 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War videotape. It's a 2-hour videotape that was prepared by Joe Friendly, and we all want to send a big round of thanks to Joe for taping it and also for preparing the edit. That premium is $125, and along with it, you get Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, which is a remarkable pamphlet that analyzes the basis for the Gulf War and for, and in its context, the basis for the current assault against Iraq. That's $125 for this remarkable videotape, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, along with Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. Those of you who've been able to come to one of Ralph's lectures know what you have in store for you and are sure to want this contribution for the WBAI Fund Drive. Those of you who've been listening to us and haven't yet been able to attend a lecture, you have something remarkable in store for you. As we mentioned before, and as all of you know who've been listening to WBAI over the last few days and over the last years, WBAI is your source for effective, insightful analysis, information, and culture. There are many music programs of great worth and importance to each and every one of us, and other programs that deal with much of the culture that we don't find on commercial radio. But most particularly, WBAI provides a forum for programs like Taking Aim that you will not hear. You can turn on any station, any radio station, and you will not hear the likes of Taking Aim. So to keep WBAI functioning, to help contribute with Taking Aim and WBAI, we want to hear those phones ringing, ringing, and ringing, and all the phone lines off the hook at 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, Maya, many of our listeners will know that the systematic documentation of the real underlying dynamics of the putative terror attacks on the United States as false flag operations has been one of the main themes of our broadcasting, of Taking Aim. Now, you are fully aware, brothers and sisters, that when we, all of us, have attempted to describe the activities and operations of the people who rule this country, very often the catchphrase, the buzzword conspiracy theory is thrown at us. It's rather like attaching a label to something, the better to dismiss it without having to think about it. One of the things I like to point out about this whole notion of conspiracy, Leon Trotsky once said that the that history is not driven by conspiracy, but the rulers in capitalist states act in a conspiratorial manner. And that really, brothers and sisters, is a function of the enormous concentration of power in our society. And we've talked about over the years how the Department of Commerce had documented that only 2% of the population of this country owned 90% of the national wealth. Well, now, most recently in the New York Times, we learned that this concentration of power has gone up 100%. It is now 1% that owns and controls 95% of the national wealth, as we've sought to explain and to document. And the meaning of this is very clear. So terribly concentrated amount of power in the hands of such a small number of people can only be exercised in a dark and hidden and conspiratorial fashion. They dare not expose and reveal their real intentions with respect to our own people. In the book Clouds of Secrecy, for example, by Lester A. Cole, who is actually a professor of public health policy now at Rutgers, but had been associated with the U.S. Army operations at Fort Detrick. This book of his, which had an introduction by the former senator from California, Alan Cranston, documents 40 years of the U.S. Army's, what is called, quote, germ warfare operations over populated areas in the United States.
Before you go on, Ralph, I want to remind people it's 212-209-2950. And if you're listening on the Internet, if you're one of the few lucky folks who are able to get onto the server today, you can make a secure contribution to WBAI on the Internet site. That's www.wbai.org. Our premium for today, $125, well worth it, is U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, along with Ralph's well-known pamphlet, Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed. Now, contributions to WBAI shouldn't need premiums or gifts, and many of you are able and generous to give beyond the $125. But if you're unemployed or if you're a low-wage worker, and by the way, right now in the United States, it's been released by the unions, the United Auto Workers did a study, 1 in 4 workers in the United States earns poverty wages. And even poverty wages, if you can, please make a contribution to WBAI, and Michael will let you know the various contribution levels. But if you can, $125 or more for our gift to you, the lecture by Ralph, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, along with Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. These programs and the book will arm you to be an effective organizer, because that's what we all need to do. We need to be on the streets some more, and bring our friends and our colleagues to listen to WBAI, to contribute to WBAI, to make WBAI their station and source for information, and to join with us on the streets and organizing in our workplace, in our community organizations, and among our friends and colleagues. Ralph?
What I was wanting to point out in reference to Clouds of Secrecy, the Army's germ warfare operations over populated areas in the United States, at the time of the publication of this book, the New York Times called it a penetrating study of the Army's clandestine 40-year biological warfare operations, a persuasive case that the Army planners knew they were exposing the young, the old, and the medically compromised to infection at 239 sites around the country. And this is rather mind-boggling, wouldn't you say, brothers and sisters? Would you say that this is an aspect of conspiracy theory on the part of the New York Times? Is it something that the United States authorities put to the public, aired in the Congress, debated in the halls of the town halls of the cities of the United States, debated or presented in speeches before the mass media? I hardly think so. It's very clear that such a tiny oligarchy presiding over a system of rule that depends upon the vast exploitation of resources and the driving down of living standards through the constant pursuit of profits from cheap labor cannot announce its plans publicly, cannot disclose openly its rule, because the 5,000 people, as Robert Townsend calculated them to be in his book, Up the Organization, that control what Townsend called the commanding heights of the United States economy. And by the way, he was the former president of Avis and American Express, hardly in the forefront of revolution. But Robert Townsend described this oligarchy as so concentrated that it was no more, in terms of its actual decision makers, but a handful of 5,000 people. Of course they operate in a clandestine fashion. Of course the facade of publicly represented policies has nothing to do with their actual behavior, the way in which they sustain a capitalist system that has to have control over production on a planetary scale to sustain its profits. That's the crisis of this system, that the concentration of power is so great that the number of people that rule us is extraordinarily tiny. How unimaginable it is that 300 million people in our country alone should be subject to the relentless will of a handful of people like this. That's what drives forward the system of rule. That's what gives it its sinister and its clandestine character. So the question of conspiracy has to do not with our minds, but with the sociological reality of our lives under corporate capitalism and the imperialism that exploits the peoples of this planet. And one other point in relation to that, and then I want to ask you to support our station and support our program and contribute on a sustained basis, because what we're talking about today is not something that you can possibly expect to hear on ABC or NBC or CBS. In 1978, a comprehensive study was prepared by the Brookings Institution with a detailed analysis of what was called the frequency of U.S. military interventions between 1946 and 1975. The report called Force as a Political Instrument was prepared by the Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency. Brothers and sisters, are we familiar with DARPA? The Defense Department's Advanced Research Projects Agency, DARPA, is integral to the Patriot Act and to the Homeland Security Act, the spying operations on people in the United States. In this document, it was revealed that the military interventions between 1946 and 1975 on the part of the U.S. Army numbered 215. This document also established that U.S. armed forces were utilized on an average of 7.2 times a year between 1946 and 1975, and once a month from 1956 to 1965. Were we consulted about this? Were we even aware of these clandestine military operations, intelligence operations? It's the nature of rule in our society. And that's why we have to rend this veil. That's why we have to disclose the way power really works. That's why we have to build a political movement that can challenge this oligarchy for control of our destiny and of our society. And that's why information, and that's why the arming of people with facts, and that's why the illumination of how our society really runs is so critical. And that's why BAI, WBAI and Pacifica is so vital to the building of a movement with information that arms it for struggle, for the combat in the streets, political, that will give us the means of struggling for power in our name for the democratization of the society. That's what's at stake, brothers and sisters. Please continue to support the station, support this program, support WBAI. Be generous with your contributions so that we can stay on the air and give you the information that we all need.
And how you get that information, how you support this radio station and certainly this network, the Pacifica Network, is to call 212-209-2950. That's area code 212-209-2950. 2950. You're listening to a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. This is a fundraising special, WBAI in its winter fundraising drive. This is a commercial-free, listener-supported radio station in the center of the FM dial. If you are interested in the information that is being presented this afternoon and will be presented until 6 p.m. this evening, I'm sitting in here in the studio with Joe Friendly, the videographer of the particular presentation we will make to you this afternoon. The audio portion of this will be coming to you for a pledge of $125, along with the booklet Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, by Ralph Schoenman. Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen are on the telephone with us. They produce a program here at WBAI called Taking Aim, and this is an extended version of Taking Aim with Ralph and Maya. We're fundraising now. As I said, this is a commercial-free, listener-supported radio station, has been listener-supported for 44 years, and Ralph and Maya have been with this station producing Taking Aim for how long has it been, Ralph and Maya?
About 14 months, isn't it, Maya?
We've had Taking Aim on for over a year, and intermittently over the long life of WBAI,
right,
both Ralph and I have been interviewed and been on programs like Africa Kaleidoscope of Alumbe Breath. And WBAI is critical. The Pacifica network is critical, and WBAI in particular, being based in the tri-state region of New York. So we want to thank Joe directly for doing such a wonderful job and for making it through the storms of the East Coast to get to the station with the videotape. As Michael said, we're going to be listening to a portion of U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. And I want to say a little bit about Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, because Ralph, as you know from listening to him, has a way of packing in an enormous amount of information and analysis. So even though we say booklet of 87 pages, that's because we wanted to make it accessible to people when we produced it. Otherwise, it would have been with big type and many pages, a 200-page book. This is a critical document. These are critical documents, this videotape and Iraq and Kuwait, to arm you for what is unfolding before us. Colin Powell has said, it is weeks, not months. The question is not
if, but when.
And we want also to thank so many people who've helped put Taking Aim on the air. Matthew Finch, who's been engineering in Berkeley for us, doing double duty.
No, not in Berkeley. But
I mean, in New York, excuse me.
He feels like he's in Berkeley sometimes.
Matthew Finch doing double duty, both as the public affairs director and as our engineer, to make sure we have very high quality. We have two engineers.
Michael and G are always at our side.
In Berkeley, we've had Erica Bridgman, and when she's away, we've had William Walker engineering, and at the WBAI studio, Matthew Finch, so that we have this cross-country connection. Now, most stations wouldn't do that, but WBAI is an exception. WBAI understood the value of Taking Aim and made a special, special effort to see that we had the engineering all together to get Taking Aim on the air. We appreciate, I don't know if anyone realizes the quality, the great quality of Michael G. and the other online
WBAI, it's an exception. Michael G. has been the mainstay of this station in engineering and organizing programs and bringing them to listeners in the greater New York area for, I don't even want to say for how many years, for many, many years, brothers and sisters. You've got to support this station. The dedication of Michael G., the dedication of Matthew Finch, the dedication of the working staff of WBAI are extraordinary, and they must be supported in their efforts and their commitment to publicly sponsored radio.
Okay, well, Ralph and Maya, we're ready to go back to the produced portion. I believe we're going to start out with an excerpt from Arnold de Borgsgrave, and we'll go to that right now. But just before we do that, give the phone number out one more time, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. This is a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. They'll be with us until 6 p.m. this evening, just before 6 o'clock this evening, when we will go to the WBAI Evening News. So thank you, Ralph, and thank you, Maya. Hold the line. We'll come back to you in about 15 minutes or so.
General Gul Hamid. Now, Gul Hamid is the head of the ISI in Pakistan, the Inter-Services Intelligence, which is the Pakistani equivalent of the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI combined, which has been, in effect, with the military, the de facto government in Pakistan since 1948. And what's particularly important about Gul Hamid is that Gul Hamid was the figure entrusted by the Central Intelligence Agency for the creation of the apparatus in Afghanistan of what became Al-Qaeda, funded again by the Central Intelligence Agency. And when Gul Hamid found that the U.S. government was preparing to remove the Taliban, the very Taliban that they had instructed him to fund and to organize and to place in power, he gave an interview, a disaffected interview, to Borgsgrave. He's very precise. Quote, in an exclusive interview with United Press International, General Gul Hamid, but recently the director of the ISI, made clear that the attacks of 9/11 were a well-prepared plot by the United States Air Force and Mossad agents. The Twin Towers were attacked at 8:45 a.m., and four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace. Air Force jets did not scramble, which is standard procedure, until 10 a.m., I'm still quoting. This is an Air Force operation and a coup. Radars are jammed, transponders fail, there is no IFF friend or foe identification. This is an inside job. You see, he said, this will be hushed up, just like the Warren Report after the Kennedy assassination, Gul Hamid stated. And he's pressed by de Borgsgrave about Osama bin Laden. He said, please. Please. This is a sophisticated operation requiring state power. Whatever his capacities, from a cave inside a mountain, from a peasant's hovel, with every move, every moment, monitored, let's be serious. He says, you and I know who are responsible for this. This is an operation of the U.S. military and the Mossad. You ask the question, who benefits? He says, the United States has been preparing to seize the resources of the region for decades. Let's be clear. It's also targeting China. It seeks its oil. It wants to destabilize its government. Look at Nixon's book. He says, the real war. Bush 43, and he means by that George W., as opposed to Bush 41, Bush 43 doesn't fully understand geopolitics. He just goes along. They have him speak in Hollywood speak, wanted dead or alive. He says, look, the Mossad and its U.S. accomplices are involved in this. And I know this. You trained me. This is Gul Hamid. You spend $40 billion a year on 11 intelligence agencies. I know this well. It's $400 billion in 10 years. You want to tell me you're taken by surprise? Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, in the World Trade Center, the CNN announced Osama bin Laden had done it. Look, I'm in intelligence. This is a planned piece of disinformation by the real perpetrators. It creates, Gouhamid stated to Arno de Boersgrave, an instant mindset designed to put public opinion in a trance which prevents even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. He says, this is an inside job. We're talking about the Pentagon. We're talking about interdicted space. We're talking about the White House. You trained me. I know how you operate. There's instant scrambling of jets for interdicted space. He says, you know and I know what this operation is. All summer long, we've heard about your shrinking surplus. The Pentagon will not have sufficient funds. Presto, all of a sudden, the Pentagon and the Bush people get what they want. No opposition. How very convenient. Even your cherished civil liberties will be eliminated with impunity. To protect the expansion of transnational capitalism, you have now been provided the excuse that you want. This is Gouhamid. His successor was General Mahmoud, director of the ISI, General Mahmoud. Ahmed Mahmoud was in Washington, D.C. in the week preceding 9/11, consulting with the Central Intelligence Agency, State Department Intelligence, and the National Security Council. And while he was there, as the Hindustani Times disclosed and the BBC confirmed, $100,000 was transferred at his direction into the account of Mohammed Atta. That disclosure, by the way, led to his resignation. But that fact has both been confirmed and unrepudiated. So as we look back on the events of 1993 and we think forward to the events of 2001, we should think about what was stated by the U.S. government about how these presumptive terrorists, by the way, none of their names appear on any of the flight lists of the airlines involved. You know that? How do they use their own names to buy airline tickets when they're on watch lists of the FBI and the FAA? The flight school owner from whom they were supposed to have taken instruction in Venice, Florida, has a long history with U.S. intelligence. Mohammed Atta was living with a guy named Charlie Voss. Charlie Voss was a contra pilot for the Central Intelligence Agency running operations into Nicaragua. Wherever you touch this thing, you have the hand of intelligence. But it goes beyond the fact that they were associated with Rudy Decker and Huffman Aviation in Venice, Florida. By the way, you know, Venice, Florida is not only one of the centers for the National Security Council. It's also one of the headquarters for Jackson Stevens, who has long been a figure of the National Security Council, directly involved with the funding of the Bush companies through the aegis of the Saudi elite, specifically the Bin Laden family. The flight school owner from which they were supposed to have taken instruction had long established links to both the Central Intelligence Agency and international organized crime, according to the San Francisco Chronicle. The flight school owner where the alleged hijackers received flying instruction in Cessnas and Piper Cubs received large sums of money for moving heroin. involved in some of the MENA Arkansas operations that were conducted by the intelligence agencies. Rudy Decker was operating his flight school not only in the south of Florida, but he was based also in Hamburg, Germany, where Mohammed Atta and his associates had been stationed prior to their being moved by Rudy Decker to Venice, Florida. Now, both of the so-called ringleaders, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, were brought to Venice, Florida, we're told, by Ruby Deckers. But there is another important dimension of this. All of these guys, these hijackers in question, had been trained at U.S. military installations. At Maxwell Air Force Base, at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas, and at the Defense Language School in Monterey, California, of the Defense Intelligence Agency. And we find that the vice chairman of that school, Stephen Butler, who had been in his position for a very long time, wrote a letter in which he stated that George Bush and the U.S. authorities were fully cognizant of the role of these people and had full responsibility for the events of September 11th. He was court-martialed, but he stands by his letter, and he was in a position to know. The hands of intelligence are all over these events. According to German prosecutors, when Mohammed Atta moved from Germany to train at Rudy Decker's flight school, four other members of his cell, who German intelligence had long monitored, and who German intelligence acknowledges had links to American authorities, were also moved to Venice, Florida. They showed up with fistfuls of dollars. The Venice gondolier wrote, "Huffman Aviation is no stranger to headlines associated with organized crime and with Central Intelligence Agency operations." The Sarasota FBI office, responsible for the Venice airport investigation, had to acknowledge that these people had prior association with U.S. intelligence agencies. Today's the Boston Globe ran a piece in which it acknowledged that the Secret Service had discovered that these people had links before to U.S. intelligence agencies and then dropped its inquiry. The Sarasota police said the Secret Service interrogated four Sudanese men upon getting a tip that these men were intending to harm President Bush. And the investigative reporter in Sarasota, acknowledging that these people could hardly have been invisible, said the following: "Four Sudanese men on an operation for which they are hiding out in Sarasota, Florida, white bread Sarasota, we'd sooner believe that Catherine Harris was secretly dating Dennis Rodman. And you could ever find four Sudanese men walking with impunity in such an operation in white bread Sarasota, Florida," writes the Sarasota Press. Newsweek reported that five of the hijackers accused received their training at secure U.S. military installations. Mohammed Atta attended International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, with a high intelligence clearance. Nobody goes to the Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base, which is for sensitive intelligence training, without being thoroughly screened. In addition, Abdulaziz Al-Aman attended the Aerospace School at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas. And Saeed Ahmadi was at Defense Language Institute, at the Defense Department's Language intelligence school, the Institute at Monterey, California. And all of them gave as an address the Pensacola Naval Air Station, and they were cleared through the U.S. Air Force International Officers School. Senator Bob Nelson of Florida faxed the note to Attorney General John Ashcroft saying, "What is going on here?" Newsweek's reporters George Vefritz, Catherine Skip, and John Barry. U.S. military sources have confirmed that the alleged hijackers of the planes used in Tuesday's terror attacks all received their training at secure U.S. military installations. In the light of this, the investigative reporter Daniel Hofziger in Florida asked this question. Was the CIA running the terrorist flight school? And the Washington Post states on September 23, 2001, the Federal Bureau of Investigation knew that the terrorists were using military schools, that they were trained there, and that we could have averted this. So what are we dealing with here? On June 4th, 1992, the Houston Chronicle published a two-part investigative series about how the feds were looking into G.W. Bush bin Laden connections. Quote, unquote. Federal authorities are investigating the activities of Houston investors and companies controlled by the son of President Bush, Bush Sr., accused of representing powerful Saudi interests laundering money illegally. And the Houston Chronicle continues, the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, known as FinCEN, and the FBI are reviewing the charges that businessman James Bath guided money to Houston from Saudi officials to control U.S. policy of the Reagan and Bush administrations, and sources close to the investigation state that FinCEN, a division of the United States Department of Treasury, is investigating major money laundering by George W. Bush. Special agents and analysts from law enforcement agencies, including the Internal Revenue Service, the U.S. Customs Service, were assigned to it. The Saudi investors about whom they are speaking are the Bin Laden Investment Group. George W. Bush's company, Bush Exploration Company, general manager in partnerships, went through a series of mergers that evolved into the Harkin Energy Corporation. Based upon the investment of Saudi Sheikh Salim bin Laden and his fortune. Arbusto was the company of George W. Bush Jr., means Bush in Spanish. The person who was facilitating this as the investor go-between was James Bass, whose partner was the top shareholder of Harkin Energy Corporation, the Saudi financial investor Abdullah Taha Bakhsh. Bakhsh, as it happens, was the closest associate of bin Laden. Shortly after George Bush Sr. was appointed director of the Central Intelligence Agency, it was Saudi Sheikh Salim bin Laden who appointed Bath as his business representative in Houston. And bin Laden and his brothers assisted the Central Intelligence Agency in Saudi Arabia. And the court documents show that Khalid bin Mahfouz of the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, BCCI, a banking empire, was involved in money laundering, drug operations, and quote-unquote terror operations. Khalid bin Mahfouz, the brother-in-law, by the way, of Osama bin Laden, the partner of George W. Bush Sr. in Harkin Energy. Mahfouz and his family, the Houston Chronicle tells us, own the National Commercial Bank, the major investors in the Bush companies in Arbusto and in Harkin Energy. And the Wall Street Journal picked up on this story. Bush in business with Bin Laden conglomerate through the Carlyle Group. The president and the president's father involved in an international firm with the Bin Laden family. The Bin Laden Group has merged and morphed into the Carlyle Group, a major investment firm of $14 billion. Who are its directors? George W. Bush, Jr. and Secretary of State James Baker.
Okay.
Welcome, and you've been listening to Ralph Schoenman with U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. That's the talk he gave at Seton Hall University, and Joe Friendly was kind enough to tape it and edit it into an incredible two-hour videotape, and that's a premium for the WBA fund drive of $125. And as a special gift along with it, given the onslaught against the people of Iraq that Secretary of State Colin Powell, President George W. Bush, Secretary of Defense Donald Rumsfeld, Vice President Dick Cheney, and many more of the ruling class seem intent to carry out in the coming days and weeks, we also have for you Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed. So that you would be armed with both U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, and the analysis of Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed, all the better to discuss and to go out and organize to stop the war and to protect the gains and rights of you, your family, your friends, your colleagues here in the United States. And the way to do that is to keep WBAI on the air. Now, some of you may be new to taking AIM, regularly listening in to Talkback. That's why we started the program today with a bit of what we do on taking AIM, as well as playing this premium. It's $125, and you call 212-209-2950. Now, of course, we also have regular WBAI memberships. And if you can, you can contribute $500, $1,000, and more to WBAI during the Taking AIM program today. We started at 3, and it's a special program. We're going to 6. Normally, we're on Tuesdays 5 to 6. Now, over the months, we have done incredible programming many times anticipating what you're later on going to read in the newspapers. I want to give you an idea of some of the shows that we did over the past months on Taking AIM, such as Smoke and Mirrors, The Pretext for Permanent War, or Shock and Awe, The Leveling of Iraq, Pimping for the Imperium. As you know, many of the political scientists, what they are stooges. They present the in so-called analysis, but really what they're doing is providing the rationale for what the ruling class wants to accomplish through its assault on the peoples of the world. Again, we exposed with the torture and the assassination and the lethal nature of class rule when we did a program on New Year's Eve called Without Restraint. Or what you don't hear about in the press, and that was material omission, U.S. cover story for the assault on Iraq. We also did two parts of What Price Genocide, because it hasn't been revealed that in Congress and throughout much of the press, they ignored an important study done by a Yale professor, William Nordhaus, who calculated that the cost in the United States of this genocide against the people of Iraq was going to be $1.9 trillion. $1.9 trillion that comes from our Social Security, that comes from our the money that should be spent on our schools, that comes from the money that should be spent on the basic infrastructure here in the United States. And how are they going to do that? How are they going to present oppose the resistance of the people in the United States? Again, we had a two-part series, Police State America, that analyzed the methods used to suppress the freedoms and the rights of people in the United States. Now, this gives you a taste of what we do on Taking AIM, and that's why we're asking you now to help keep Taking AIM and WBAI running smoothly. And that is at 212-209-2950. If you're listening on the Internet, you can make a secure contribution online. But in the tri-state area, now is the moment, 212-209-2950. WBAI in this fund drive is giving many of the shows an opportunity to have a three-hour time block. That affords us time for you to listen to part of the premium, to have ongoing discussion, and to get to know new listeners, not just the people who listen to us from 5 to 6, but to be introduced to you, the people who listen during Hugh Hamilton's talk back. So we want you to know us, and we want to know you. So give us some of your comments when you call to make your pledge at 212-209-2950. Now, one of the things that's happening with these three-hour blocks is that those of you who are our Taking AIM listeners, this is going to be your only opportunity during the fund drive to make your contribution for Taking AIM. We will not be on next week. So now is the moment to come to the telephone, step up to the plate, as they say, 212-209-2950 for this incredible program prepared by Joe Friendly, a Ralph lecturer at Seton Hall University, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, and as well the pamphlet Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. As you know, and you know really full well, and if you've listened now and heard Ralph for the first time, you will see in the videotape how much you can learn in such a short time, how he brings it all together. Now, what we've done as a special gift for our listeners at WBAI and our listeners throughout the world, because many people listen to Taking AIM on the Internet and are being introduced to other BAI programs through the wonders of the Internet. Mark Bilk here in California has prepared a Taking AIM archive, and we have many of the programs in the last few months up there already. And we want to thank the people at Radio for Houston for allowing us space on their server. The archive, the audio archive, is at www.radio, and the numeral 4, radio4houston.org/taking aim. As well, we have worked really hard, or actually Pamela Summers in New York, one of the loyal WBAI listeners and a real activist for WBAI, has taken the time to create a special Taking AIM website. And that's at www.wbaifree.org/taking aim. And Pamela rushed to get it done just in time for this fund drive as our special gift to you. Now, we've prepared the special gift, thanks to Pamela Summers and Mark Bilk, and we want you to also give a gift to Taking AIM and WBAI, 212-209-2950. It's $125 for Ralph Schoenman's spectacular video of U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, thanks to another wonderful WBAI activist, Joe Friendly. We can't talk about taking aim without mentioning a very special person, and that's Bradley Wiedmeyer. Bradley is a longtime political activist and close friend of ours who is sacrificing his free time to come and help us each week with the production of Taking Aim, with our research, with helping us file our research and keeping all the incredible, meticulous documentation that we use for the preparation of Taking Aim together. Bradley, what he did is he ganged up all his shifts for his full-time job so that he would have a few days to be with us. So a big round of thanks to Bradley Wiedmeyer, and a big round of thanks to all of you who are calling in right now and contributing to Taking Aim and keeping WBAI going. What a resource. Let me tell you, if you live anywhere in the United States or outside the United States, outside the reach of these community and listener-based stations, you realize what a wasteland it is out there and how lucky we are, how much we depend on WBAI. Ralph?
Monthly Review, brothers and sisters, in the February 2003 issue, has a striking article about weapons of mass destruction. The United States has at present more than 1 million major munitions armed with mustard gas agents alone. Artillery shells with mustard gas are stockpiled in 8 states: Maryland, Alabama, Kentucky, Indiana, Arizona, Colorado, Utah, and Oregon, and the Johnson Atoll. And taking into account chemical weapons agents, the report shows that the United States military has 31,000 tons of chemical and biological weapons encased in multi-millions of munitions at these 9 sites. In addition, the United States has vast and not fully disclosed quantities of non-stockpile chemical materials encompassing a wide variety of chemical warfare agents, and that does not include the unitary stockpile, which was revealed in 1986. All of this, by the way, is documented by the Federation of American Scientists. There are 89 locations in 38 states and United States territories where weapons of mass destruction, specifically nerve gas, biological agents, viruses and bacteria that engender epidemic disease, are stored and are prepared for use on a planetary scale. It is significant that the growth media for biological weapons are concentrated by Washington and in the United States. And indeed, during the Reagan and Bush administrations, 70 shipments of clone germs and chemicals with biological and chemical warfare capacity were delivered for use to Saddam Hussein, to be used against the people of Iran, and also to be used against those who resisted his CIA-supported rule in Iraq. Their man in Baghdad for 27 years.
Now, Ralph, that brings me to the mention of Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, which is a very careful and extensive documentation of how their man in Baghdad came to power and why they put their man in Baghdad into power, which was to prevent the self-determination of the Iraqi people and of having a country that was ruled in by them and for them.
The Iraqi Revolution of 1958.
That was on July 14th, 1948.
Yes, on Bastille Day, 1958. Yes. The uprising of the Iraqi people, which overthrew the puppet government, the British colonial puppet regime of Nur Said, and the infant King Faisal II, was removed in a mass uprising in 1958, when the free officers, the nationalist officers who came to power, namely in particular Abdul Karim Qasim, who I knew and had long discussions with in a series of meetings in Baghdad in 1962. Along with his foreign minister Hashim Jawad and his minister of justice, Justice Minister Yahya. Their plans at the time for the nationalization of oil in Iraq, for the legalization of the Nationalist Party, for the legalization of the Iraqi Communist Party, and for the restriction of foreign foreign oil corporations to no more than 0.1% of the territory of Iraq. It was these policies which were directly in response to the demands of the masses of people that mobilized in all the major cities of Iraq and throughout the countryside for the regaining of control of the economic and natural resources of Iraq by the Iraqi people themselves. That's what got the CIA going to prepare for the murder of Abdulkarim Qasim by their man in Baghdad, none other than Saddam Hussein.
And one way we can regain control of the United States is to keep WBAI on the air and make a contribution right now. Don't hesitate. Don't think that you're going to wait until after the program is over. Don't think you're going to wait until tomorrow. Now is the moment. Seize the time. Seize the moment and dial 212-209-2950. There are wonderful people at the phones. People like you. If you have a moment, come down and staff the phones at WBAI. Remember, it's your station. Everything you can do to keep WBAI on the air, volunteering, helping out with the fund drives, helping out with the ongoing work at WBAI is significant. WBAI runs on a shoestring staff, very, very small staff, considering the 24-hour programming 7 days a week. Everybody is doing double duty. As I mentioned, Matthew Finch, not only a public affairs director and someone involved in arts programming, but again, he engineers our show to make sure that you have each week the quality programming. Now, we could go through the entire WBAI staff and say how many tasks they take on. As well, we have so many people like Ralph and myself who are unpaid staff. It takes, with even all this unpaid staff, so much money to keep WBAI on the air. And this is just a fraction of the cost that it does to keep the commercial stations on the air. But on a commercial station, you are bombarded every 2-3 minutes with a commercial. You know that's not true here at WBAI. 24/7, you get complete, thorough, uninterrupted programming. So now is the moment to make sure that that goes on.
And Maya,
212-209-2950. I'm always reminding you of the phone because many times people are just tuning in. And if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Taking Aim on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial in the tri-state region of New York and the internet internationally, worldwide, on www.wbai.org. So pick up the phone, 212-209-2950. For $125, you can get Ralph Shulman's lecture, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, an incredible videotape, and you also get Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed.
Maya, I want to point out that many of the people who have, Bernard White and now Don Rojas, have devoted years to the work and the political commitment required for public affairs programming. And our friend and brother Don Rojas, you should understand, was the communications director for Maurice Bishop and part of the revolution in Grenada that was overthrown and destroyed when the United States invaded Grenada. We invaded Grenada and terrorized the Grenadian people, and destroyed all of the gains of that revolution. And Brother Don Rojas then was an editor of the Amsterdam News in New York and was a leader of the NAACP, and now a director at WBAI. We are lucky to have Brother Don with us, and it's a measure of the commitment to public affairs radio and radio information that allows people to gain the information they need to go into political struggle for the vital needs and interests of our people in the United States. Keep this programming alive, brothers and sisters. Sustain the ability of Don Rojas, of Bernard White, of all of the people who are so committed to WBAI to maintain themselves at this station, to keep the public broadcasting going, to support programs like taking aim.
That's 212-209-2950. U.S. State Terror 9/11, The Politics of Permanent War, the two-hour video presented by Ralph Schoenman. It's made available to us by Joe Friendly, sitting here with me in studio. We're asking you to support this radio station. We have a room full of volunteers, about 12 people who've come down to the radio station here this afternoon to help us answer the telephones and take your pledges throughout the tri-state area at 212-209-2950. Henry and Carol Hicks, we want to thank them very, very much from Brooklyn, New York, for making a contribution, an additional contribution to this radio station. They pledge each time we have fundraisers here at WBAI, sometimes two and three times a fund drive. Thank you, Henry and Carol, very, very much. Perry from Valley Cottage, New York. Thank you, Perry. Robert from New York City, 212-209-2950. Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed by Ralph Schoenman. We will include that with the two-hour video. The two-hour video, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, The Politics of Permanent War, for a pledge of $125. You can put that on your Visa, your MasterCard, or your American Express. You can take out a regular subscription to WBAI for a pledge of $50. $25 if you're a student or a senior citizen. If you want to get the video and the book compilation package, please do make those calls right now. We're just about 2 minutes from resuming the presentation given by Ralph at Seton Hall University, but we'd like to get a few more calls now. The phone lines are ringing. People are answering your phone calls, the people in your community, people in the tri-state area, and certainly in Manhattan on this snow day here at in New York City, have come down to the radio station to help answer phones. So make your calls right now, 212-209-2950. We'd like to thank James Butler from Bradley Beach, New Jersey. Thank you very much. And we broadcast 60 miles in all directions from the Empire State Building where our transmitter is held. Joyce from Briarwood, New York. Thank you, Joyce. 212-209-2950. Ralph and Maya, we're about a minute from going back to programming.
I just wanted to mention that on the Senate floor on Wednesday, February 12, 2003, the U.S. Senator Robert Byrd made a remarkable statement. He said, "Every American on some level must be contemplating the horrors of war. Yet this chamber," in referring to the Senate, "is silent, ominously, dreadfully silent. There is no debate, no discussion, no attempt to lay out for the nation the pros and cons of this particular war. There is nothing. We stand passively mute in the United States Senate." Now, there we have in Congress the elected representatives of the people of the United States, Democrats, Republicans alike, standing silent, not discussing. But here you have on WBAI open discussion, open debate, reaching out, helping us, giving information, providing analysis and context. And when we are out in the streets, there is WBAI out in the streets with us. We are one community. We are not silent. We are not standing mute. Please contribute, 212-209-2950. Remember, we are the people. We are the many, and they are the few. And we depend upon ourselves only to keep our means of communication open, alive, and on the air. 212-209-2950.
And we resume with the produced portion of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. This special edition of Taking Aim, they will be with us. Ralph and Maya will be with us until 6 p.m. this evening. Please continue to call 212-209-2950. This is WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM, New York's radio voice for peace and justice.
The idea of the president's father and the president involved with people under investigation for the terror attacks of September 11th is horrible. What did this president say? Those who give succor to the terrorists, those who have financial dealings with the terrorists, we shall seize their assets. We shall hunt them down. You are with us or against us, and we shall destroy them. We are dealing here with this ruling class. It is a murder incorporated. These operations are false flag operations, brothers and sisters. These people have a long history together. Osama bin Laden's father and his grandfather died in airplane crashes, not unlike the one that took the life of Senator Wellstone. He died in the same plane that flew George Bush Sr. and William Casey to the meeting in Paris known as the October Surprise. And you may recall that the October Surprise was the deal made prior to the national election in 1980 when Ronald Reagan was the presidential candidate and George Bush Sr. was the vice presidential candidate, in which they made a deal with the Khomeini regime to delay the release of the hostages until after the election so as to embarrass Carter, facilitate the election of Reagan and Bush in exchange for various commitments. That airplane, which carried Bush and Casey, had on board as well the father of Osama bin Laden. And when he took the plane back without them, it crashed and he died. BCCI, exposed, documented, revealed. An operation involving drug trafficking, terrorist operations, the laundering of money, and the corruption of governments across the planet. Well, what else do we need to know about the Carlyle Group? Its chairman is the former U.S. Secretary of Defense, Frank Carlucci. Carlucci, by the way, was the point man of the Central Intelligence Agency for the execution of Patrice Lumumba. And one of his proteges, whose career flowed from the support of Frank Carlucci, was a young military officer named Colin Powell. Now, the Carlyle Group is drawn to defense. Defense and aerospace firms such as the United Defense Industries make up a significant share of the world's largest private equity portfolio. Also represented are federal data information technology, real estate, and above all, the pharmaceutical industry. Because the Carlyle people have a direct involvement with Bioport, the company in Michigan responsible for requiring the vaccination of U.S. soldiers, supposedly coming up with a vaccine for smallpox and anthrax, linked to Porton Downs, which is the equivalent in Great Britain where much of the biological warfare operations that I described earlier were coordinated, where British citizens were subject to the same sort of thing that I documented with respect to civilian populations in the United States. A host of high-level people, a virtual who's who of the Reagan and Bush administrations, are involved in the Carlyle Group. James Baker, ex-budget chief Richard Darman, former President Bush, United Kingdom Prime Minister John Major, the article in the Wall Street Journal, traveling with the fanfare of dignitaries, Bush and Baker used their contacts to further their interests as representatives of the Carlyle Group, a $14 billion private equity group based in Washington, D.C., that has parlayed a roster of former top government officials into a money-making machine. Well, Frank Carlucci was the college roommate and classmate of Donald Rumsfeld, and another one of their close associates is Vice President Dick Cheney, himself a former Secretary of Defense under President Bush, quote, Carlyle is so deeply wired into military arms production, one of the largest equity investors in the world. It specializes in buying up companies that do business with the Department of Defense and then arranging for sweetheart contracts that usually inflate the stock and actions of the principals in the Carlyle Group. The Baltimore Chronicle and Sentinel on its front page. The Republican-controlled Carlyle Group poses the most serious ethical questions for this Bush presidency. Described by the industry standard as the world's largest private equity firm, with over $14 billion under official management, it is directly linked to the military expansion being proposed. It profits daily. Isn't it a bit odd, the article continues, that it is run by a virtual who's who of the Republic's political leaders? Carlucci, the college roommate of current Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, partners in a mammoth venture including Bush, James Baker, George Soros, Fred Malik, George H.W. Bush's campaign manager, 420 partners all over the globe, from the Saudis involved in BCCI to the former and discredited president of the Philippines. Its investments are in the defense sector. They make money from military conflict. They make fortunes from weapons spending, says the Baltimore Sentinel. And we learn that another of their associates, Robert Mueller, was appointed the new director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He handled the effort to keep quiet the relationship between George Bush Sr. and the Jordanian merchant Mansour Bahruti, associated with Oliver North in the selling of weapons, specifically chemical weapons and biological weapons, to both Iraq and Iran. So what is this den of thieves that calls itself the government of the United States? It is our ruling class. It is the people who usurp power and who manipulate us and who use state terror as their primary instrument. On and on it goes. Time magazine. The investors who made the arrangements for the Bushes, junior and senior, are the deal brokers whose associations run from the Central Intelligence Agency to the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, involved in money laundering, in drug traffic. Global News reports that these financial institutions associated with the Bushes were so involved in drug money laundering, arms brokering, covert intelligence, and bribery of government officials that they are the principal instrument for the funding of what are called terrorist operations in the world. In the book The Outlaw Bank, by Time correspondents Jonathan Beatty and S.C. Gwynn, James Bath made his fortune by investing the money of Khalid bin Mahfouz and the bin Ladens in the Bush companies. Well, the BCCI defrauded its depositors of $10 billion. It was called the largest bank fraud in world financial history by former Manhattan District Attorney Robert Morgenthau, who also disclosed that it was the main conduit for laundering money, drug money, and clandestine CIA activities, such as financial support to fundamentalist groups at the behest of the Central Intelligence Agency. And Khalid bin Mahfouz's interests included a partnership with Gates Faroun, the main frontman for BCCI and Houston's main bank, That's how money came to Arbusto. That's how money came to Hargan Energy. That's how money comes to the Carlyle Group. It lines the pockets of this president. Quote, Bin Mahfouz has been financing the Bin Laden terrorist network, making George W. Bush a U.S. citizen who does business with those who finance and support terrorists, unquote. USA Today, Bin Mahfouz and the Saudis transfer billions of dollars and millions go to various Bin Laden front operations in Saudi Arabia, unquote. ABC News, in 1999, Saudi officials acknowledged that Khalid Bin Mahfouz contributes funds directly to Osama Bin Laden. ABC News. We find, by the way, that Khalid Bin Mahfouz's sister is the wife of Osama Bin Laden. The fact that was revealed by the former CIA director James Woolsey in 1998. It inspired the writer Al Martin to publish an article called Hitting America Before the Beltway. Excuse me, Below the Beltway. Look, brothers and sisters, I'm going to run down a few more of the primary elements of this, because believe me, I could be here 4 hours with the particulars. And every last detailed aspect of it demonstrates and documents the false flag operation that is 9/11. Illuminates that these wars of conquest, these wars of predation, are on behalf of a rapacious ruling class that looks upon our own people as its most dire enemy. Because our people are not reconciled to this. Taken in, many of us may be, but reconciled we are not. And they know it, and they fear it. The entire apparatus of repression that they prepare revolves around that reality. And all of their constant litany of insistence that we are but before the next round of terrorist attack. Yes, they're going to poison our water supply. They're going to put anthrax in our drinking water. They're going to contaminate the air and the nuclear power plants. Is but the little continuation of what they did on 9/11. On September 9th of this year, there was a rather remarkable revelation in Newsweek. Twice a week, the Threat Committee, a group of top intelligence officials, meets in the White House to view dozens of terrorist operations that are expected at home. And Newsweek says, there was no mention of the fact that on September 10th, 2001, Newsweek has learned, the top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled their travel plans for the next morning because of security concerns. On September 10th of 2001, Dan Rather did an interview with Tom Kennedy of FEMA. Excuse me. He interviewed Tom Kennedy on the 12th of September about the preparations of FEMA in the light of the events of September 11th. And what Tom Kennedy stated to Dan Rather was that FEMA had been very well prepared. They had arrived in New York on September 10th. That's an interview. They say that White Bread could not begin to describe the complexion of Dan Rather in response, in reaction to that response from Tom Kennedy. By the way, for what it's worth, do you recall how it was trumpeted that Osama bin Laden had made a videotape that was released in Al Jazeera, which he was celebrating the attacks on the World Trade Center? Well, in Great Britain, electronic experts, notably a man named Honeybee Sabai in the BBC, did an analysis of those videotapes, which, by the way, had captions because you couldn't make out what the actual words were. What they discovered was that it was a scissors and paste job. They located the footage of a wedding ceremony 4 years before at which Osama bin Laden was present, where he was congratulating the participants in the wedding and the bride and groom. And they married that footage to the scissors and paste job, and they foisted this upon the peoples of the world as an example of Osama bin Laden celebrating the events of 9/11. And there was another such event. The Central Intelligence Agency, trumpeted then by Mr. Rumsfeld, produced another such video in which it was said that a paraplegic sheikh from Saudi Arabia was making a pilgrimage to Osama bin Laden, who then proceeded to discuss the events of 9/11. Of course, you can't hear him, but they assure us that's what they were saying. And they say that the Saudi sheikh was saying how he was traveling during the month of Ramadan and during the full moon. Problem, there was no full moon. Secondly, the route was under saturation bombing by B-2 bombers. No one had access to it. And thirdly, Mazar-e-Sharif had just fallen. Kabul had fallen. But not a syllable of reference to these somewhat significant events in their lives by the principals. And all in Al Jazeera and in Great Britain and in France, they concluded this was a total fabrication. Now, as it happens, there have been two interviews that were given by Osama bin Laden. One was to the BBC, and the second was to a Pakistani publication called Umat. And they're rather surprising. Osama bin Laden states, "I have no involvement with the events of September 11th or the attacks in New York and Washington because, as Muslims, we do not consider that attacks on women and children and civilian men are an appreciable act. And I state before my God that I have no quarrel with the American people. Our quarrel is with this system that oppresses us. If you want to understand the events of September 11th, look to the secret government in the United States, and there you will find your answer." Now, Osama bin Laden, without attempting in any sense to romanticize this erstwhile instrument, is very, very concrete, elaborative, and he intends, particularly in the interview in Umat, to reach out to the madrasi and to the Muslim population to whom he appeals. He has no incentive, if he's celebrating these events, to go on record in Umat in this way. Venice is not only the location where Mohammed Atta and his colleagues were present. We now know that the airfield where he was trained on these little puddle jumpers was notorious for covert operations of the United States. Quote, Venice was even a target of the Soviet Union in the event of nuclear war because of the military nature of activity centered there. During the Vietnam War, pilots were trained in Venice for paramilitary operations of the Central Intelligence Agency proprietary Air America. So too were the Bush pilots during the conflicts in Central and South America during the Iran-Contra era. It is not unusual to see military Black Hawk helicopters touch down at Venice Airport in the middle of the night and take off again 30 seconds later. You look up and down, and there are 5,000 soldiers from the 101st Airborne landing and taking off. What they're hiding down in Venice, Florida, is not just Mohammed Atta. Since most of the hijackers used this as their home base, and while they were at U.S. military installations, it becomes clear this is a larger story than the American people are being allowed to know. As recently as July, Raytheon and the U.S. Air Force tested air-to-air missiles at Venice Airport for the air defense system of Homeland Defense. The hands of U.S. intelligence. What about Zachariah Massawi? Zachariah Massawi, according to BBC, the only man charged in connection with the 11th of September attacks, has asked to testify before the United States Congress. Zacharias Massawi stated, both I and those accused of being hijackers were under continued surveillance by the Federal Bureau of Investigation, which agency knew about all of the designated attacks and permitted these attacks to take place. I have the relevant information, I have the documents and the proof, and I ask to appear before members of the United States Congress so I may present them with it. He says the FBI had not only infiltrated all of these groups, but chose not to take any steps to interfere with these attacks because, Zacharias Massawi states, according to the BBC, it was their intention that they should occur. As soon as he made that statement, the judge made a ruling that the rest of the trial would be in camera. No journalists would be permitted to attend it, nor would the public be allowed to know any of the proceedings from that point on. And the next day, the Federal Bureau of Investigation sequestered the private memoranda, the appointment books, the notebooks, the computer logs, and all diaries of every member of the Senate Intelligence Committee in order to ascertain with which journalists these members of the Senate Intelligence Committee had been in touch, which prompted the San Francisco Chronicle to write indignantly, they are depriving members of the Senate Intelligence Committee of elementary rights that normally would be rights that they...
WBAI, New York, 99.5 FM. This is a special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
No, brothers and sisters, it is not the crisis which is new, nor is it the evil which has changed. It's rather that we are under the control of a small, relentless ruling class that uses state terror to impose its will, and which has in store for us a measure of repression that has never yet been attempted on the scale that they are now preparing it in the United States. CNN did a remarkable program about what was called the School for Urban Control, which is part of, by the way, the FEMA that Oliver North established. And it's interesting to note that the FEMA was established as part of an operation of the Nugan Bank in Australia, which was precisely the kind of money laundering and drug running and covert and terrorist activity that the BCCI had also been established to effect. And at that point, it was called not the Federal Emergency Management Administration, but the Federal Emergency Military Administration. And it called for, quote, the creation of a parallel and secret government, the suspending of the Constitution, and the development of civil disturbance plans to meet with opposition in the population. A secret government. On July 5, 1987, the Miami Herald published reports on the goals of FEMA. Suspend the Constitution. Create camps of detention. And round up 21 million American Negroes. Miami Herald. 21 million American Negroes. Under the direction of FEMA Director Louis Giafrida and his deputy John Bringerhoff. Martial law. This also was a program which has been incorporated into the Homeland Security Act, the Patriot Act, to seize all medical facilities, to force individuals to undergo forced vaccination, to mandate that all healthcare providers report on any individual to the federal authorities who comes under their care. They are also preparing, according to the San Francisco Chronicle, a model law drafted for the states at the request of the federal government to seize hospitals, to order quarantines, to control the sale of food, a 40-page document that gives the authorities the right to impose vaccinations, quarantine, and the isolation of large numbers of people. And CNN on the Army School of Urban Control, a report of October 16, 2001. What has not been explained to the American people is the reason why 35,000 Special Army units and 65,000 National Guard units have been called up to maintain internal checkpoints in the United States. They are all being trained at the United States Army School of Urban Control at Fort Campbell, Kentucky. And CNN is showing a training program enacted at Fort Campbell. All citizens, a structure with a sign on it reads, all citizens not having proper identification will be detained. All foreign nationals will be detained. All citizens deemed to be acting in suspicious manner will be detained. At each of their posts, there are armed Army and National Guard officers with M16s. They have new uniforms. They have gray uniforms with a gray helmet and a visor so their eyes are not visible. And CNN comments, they look exactly like the Imperial Stormtroopers from Star Wars. All the helmets have little transceivers so they can communicate with each other. At the checkpoints, there's a notice. Any detainees attempting to escape will not. As citizens arrive, they are asked, "May I see your identification, citizen?" The big signs on the side of the machine gun nest state Homeland Security internal checkpoints. And the soldiers are instructed, according to CNN, to require the citizens to state, "Hail the Republic."
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. This is our special three-hour show during the WBAI Fun Drive. Welcome, Taking Aim listeners. If you've missed today's program, you've come in during a section of the special lecture Ralph did at Seton Hall University, U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. This two-hour talk, edited and videotaped and edited by Joe Friendly, is our WBAI premium for this fund drive. Along with that, we are offering you Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, a double whammy of analysis, compact information, and providing you the context for the important organizing that we all must do in these coming days. It's $125. Get on the phones right away. We'll be playing some more of the soundtrack from the video, and we'll be here discussing with you in our regular, rapid-paced, meticulously documented style. 212-209-2950. By now, all you Taking Aim listeners should know this phone number because you've been listening to WBAI over the years and to Taking Aim for the past 14 months. We appreciate every time during these fund drives. Taking Aim has been a critical element to the WBAI fund drive. You, our listeners, have shown your appreciation to WBAI for putting Taking Aim on the air. We are in a unique position in the tri-state region to have this show. And so you can come forth now to call 212-209-2950. $125 for the significant video. 2 hours, Ralph Schoenman's U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. And to arm you to discuss the onslaught against Iraq that's coming in within a matter of weeks, according to U.S. Secretary of State Colin Powell. We know it's going to be a matter of weeks because soon the temperature will be 100 degrees in the Iraqi desert. So Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. If you you can still subscribe to WBAI, a regular listener subscription is $50, and if you're a student or a low-income senior, $25. Also remember that there is no limit. You can contribute more than $125, and it'll be greatly appreciated. WBAI, listener-sponsored radio, depends on you. The electric bill, the few staff salaries, the health care benefits that are so crucial for a staff. We've got to have WBAI staff members, the engineers, the receptionists, the backroom staff, the public affairs director, the new general manager. Everyone needs to have a quality life. And they work at penurious wages. We must keep them employed. We must keep this station on the air. We must provide also for the infrastructure at WBAI, the ISDN lines that enable us to broadcast from California to New York, that allow WBAI to do remote control receptions, such as during the past weekend when there was the massive outpouring of people from WBAI and throughout the New York region on the streets of New York. the massive outpouring, being part of the 30 people who demonstrated throughout the world to make sure that there would not be assault against the Iraqi people, and to demonstrate that we will not have it against the people of the United States, because an injury to one is an injury to all. And they pay for these rapid and ever-present invasion of the people of throughout the world by off our backs, by taking away our health care, by taking away our Social Security, by destroying the infrastructure of the United States.
The Center for Non-Proliferation Studies at Monterey Institute of International Studies documented the perpetual use of biological and chemical weapons by the United States military in warfare. And it's interesting to me in particular that they cite massive quantities of biological and chemical agents used by the United States in Indochina during from 1962 to 1970. Brothers and sisters, it puts me in mind of the time when I was working in those years with Bertrand Russell. That's, in fact, specifically in 1962, I started to work with Russell at the end of 1959. But in 1962, a letter was sent by Bertrand Russell to the New York Times, which cited the use of biological and chemical agents throughout Indochina by the United States military. And the New York Times published that letter, but removed five paragraphs which specified the weaponry, which gave the particular villages in which it was used, which set forth the physiological impact of this weaponry, which included gases that exploded the pupil of the eye. And having published a letter, but removing the five paragraphs with the New York Times then ran an editorial which accused Bertrand Russell of spreading communist propaganda, as he in his heart must know. Russell wrote back to the New York Times and stated that he had never had an experience of this nature in which they censored his letter, published it by removing the documentation, and then accused him for lack of evidence. And interestingly, at the time, the editor of the editorial page, John B. Oakes, wrote to Russell and said, "Do you mean to say, Lord Russell, that if you were to attack the Soviet Union as relentlessly as you do the United States, that Pravda or Izvestia would publish your letter?" And we wrote back and said to John B. Oakes, "Undoubtedly not. But neither Pravda nor Izvestia has ever purported to publish a letter of mine while removing the evidence and accusing me for the lack of it. If the former would be suppression, the latter is conscious fraud." The New York Times would not publish that exchange of correspondence. It was published by the student peace movement in the United States in a pamphlet of the day in 1962 called Bertrand Russell and the New York Times on Vietnam. The efforts that we were making in those years with the Bertrand Russell Peace Foundation to document the systematic use of biological and chemical weapons by the United States military in Indochina then evolved into what became known as the International Tribunal on U.S. War Crimes in Vietnam, which had investigative teams over periods of weeks and months in the liberated zones of South Vietnam, throughout North Vietnam, meticulously recording these real weapons of mass destruction, the total devastation of the countryside and of the civilian population of Indochina. That is the paradigm, that is the nature, that is the character of U.S. imperialism in its relentless war on the peoples of the world, the seizure of their resources, the suppression of their national movements, the destruction of their efforts at self-determination, and for the social control of their own resources and their own lives.
And that is why WBAI is so critical to our efforts to have control of our society in our interests and in our name. And that means you must dial now 212-209-2950. As everyone knows, Ralph gets carried away, and I want you to get carried away. But when, after we have everyone lighting up all 12 lines, we have volunteers, WBAI listeners, who have braved the snowstorm. I saw pictures of the piles, the mounds of snow in New York. Now, these people have come into the WBAI studio. They're sitting by the phone. They want to talk to you. They want to hear the phone. We want to hear those phones ringing 212-209-2950. $125, you have this special videotape prepared by Joe Friendly of U.S. State Terror 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War, an incredible talk given by Ralph at Seton Hall University. As well, you have the meticulous documentation and analysis, as we think only Ralph can do, and those of you who listen know as only Ralph can do, in Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. If you already have a copy of this pamphlet, now is the time to get another one so that you can send it to one of your family, your friends, your colleague. There is no better moment than now to be listening to U.S. State Terror 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War, which ties together the events of 9/11 with what is taking place against the people of Iraq and against the people here in the United States. Now is the moment. 212-209-2950.
The motto of the New York Times is "All the truth is fit to print." In truth, the real motto of the New York Times is "All the lies the ruling class requires." That is why Pacifica Radio and WBAI, as Maya has been saying so eloquently, are vital to us. The ability to reach out to our people, to arm them with truth, speak truth to power, to prepare ourselves for political combat, for a struggle for control of our own society. In our most recent days, brothers and sisters, we have seen a worldwide outpouring without precedent in recorded history. As the Guardian in London puts forward, over 30 million people mobilized in over 650 cities. And that's major cities now, large cities and towns.
Yes, because
the world.
Here in Vallejo, we had a mobilization. A small city of Vallejo in California, over 250 people. In Fresno in California, throughout each state, there were mobilizations. Not only the huge concentration in New York and in San Francisco, a concentration that even the San Francisco Chronicle, which usually vastly underestimates the numbers of people. The police in San Francisco said 200,000, and we had helicopters up there, so we're soon going to have a really precise count.
Which is much
because
closer
we think
to 300,000 than 200,000, but the largest demonstration in the history of
California.
Yes. There is no measure for the outpouring of humanity to oppose the imperial wars, and this presents us with both an opportunity and a responsibility, brothers and sisters, because never before have we had a mobilization on this scale to oppose imperial plans before the war itself is actually unleashed. The mobilizations that we were engaged in preparing, when I was the director of the Vietnam Solidarity Campaign in London, it took us literally years to reach the mass proportions that have already unfolded before the attack in Iraq. This is a measure of the disaffection of vast sectors of the working population from the plans and from the power of the ruling class. We have the opportunity, therefore, we have the responsibility to prepare the political instruments to recruit the population to political movements, political parties that reflect their needs and are capable of challenging this oligarchy for power. It is a revolutionary process, and revolutions are not made like Nescafe, brothers and sisters. They are made through information, through mobilization, through dedication, through preparing the instruments for political struggle. Information is vital to that. In the beginning, Rosa Luxemburg said, was the deed, not only the word. But the word is linked to the deed, and WBAI is dedicated to that task. Support it. Support it. Support it. Give your support to this process, to this struggle.
That's 212-209-2950 for the incredible two-hour videotape. 2 hours of videotape that you can share. You can have a whole room full of people. You can make it a special Saturday night event. U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, Ralph Schoenman, and so that you have reading and documentation and know where to get and learn more about the assault on Iraq, Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. 212-209-2950. and that's a $125 contribution. And if you've got more in these times, please send more. This is your only opportunity, because we will not be on the air next week during special fund drive. WBAI is giving the programs an opportunity to have a three-hour window, and today was our three-hour window, so another program will be on next week. So now is your only moment to show WBAI how much Taking AIM means to you. Information, analysis, context. Remember our shows. Ready to Roll in the U.S. and Against Iraq. That was the program of November 12th. I was looking, preparing an index of our shows, which are now archived on the internet, thanks to Mark Filk at www.radio4houston. That's the number four, radio4houston.org/taking aim. And all the way back in August, August 13th, we started with Pea Soup of Deception. And I think if we go even further back, we had shows talking about the onslaught against Iraq and how it had already started. And also, as a special gift for you, one of the loyal WBAI listeners and activists, Pamela Summers. I can't thank Pamela and Mark enough. Pamela Summers has prepared a website for Taking AIM, and that's at www.wbaifree.org/taking aim. So we have now archived many of our programs, and we have a text website for you. So that is our gift to you, and your gift to us and to yourself. Really, it's your gift to yourself, is to get on that phone, keep all 12 phone lines busy and ringing, and all the volunteers who brave the storms of New York active. 212-209-2950. $125 U.S. State Terror 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War, as well as Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed. $50 is the regular WBAI subscription, and I don't think there should be a listener in the tri-state region of New York, as Michael G. has told us, 60 miles in all directions from the great Empire State Building. That's a big territory, and every one of you should be a regular subscriber. $50. There are 365 days in a year, so that's really pennies a day. $50 for a regular subscription to WBAI. $25 if you're a student. All you students, I know how much textbooks cost and how they weigh you down. They really get you with the price of textbooks. The best textbook you can have is a subscription to WBAI. This is your station, your source for information and analysis. A program like Taking AIM, $25 for each and every student you know. 212-209-2950. Now, as you know, our fun pitches are always full of information. As I say, we like to give you a piece of information for every $10 we're getting. And so Ralph is going to talk a little bit about the onslaught against Iraq.
And just before you do that, Ralph, just want to just catch a few more calls coming in now, because this is the Taking AIM audience right here between 5 and 6 p.m. on Tuesday evenings. We're in the fun drive right now. Those of you who are new listeners to WBAI and are just picking up this signal at 99.5 FM, Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen produce this program, Taking AIM, and we bring it to you Tuesday at 5 o'clock. Those of you who may have been listening since or from the 4 o'clock hour, you have been treated to this information being broadcast literally commercial-free. We have come to you 3 to 4 times per year to ask for your financial support of this radio station, this radio network, the Pacifica Network, of which WBAI is part and parcel of. We come to you to ask for your pledges of support, and each and every time we come to you and ask for your support, you come through spectacularly. As I said, this is the Taking AIM audience. They are listening And they are supporting. The volunteers in the back now are very busy and are taking phone calls. We've had a steady stream of phone calls at 212-092-9950 for the past 15 minutes. Thank you very, very much. And yes, Mike, we'd like to thank the volunteers who've come down to the radio station today at 120 Wall Street on the 10th floor, the WBAI studios, to answer phones. Now, we only have a few minutes left to go before we'll go back to the produced portion of Taking Aim for the next few minutes, and then Ralph and Maya will be talking to you, talking about the importance of listener-sponsored radio, the importance of their show on this listener-sponsored radio station. So please make your calls right now, 212-209-2950. If you get a busy signal, well, actually, that's a good thing. Please be patient. The people in Tally will get to your calls in just a minute. Make that redial again and call us up at WBAI and pledge your support. Whatever you can to this radio station, we will gladly accept it. You pledge using your Visa, your MasterCard, or American Express. If you'd like to send us a check or any order, tell the people in Tally. We'll send you an invoice in about seven to ten days. Wait for that invoice to come in and then make your pledge and then send that check or that money order. Make your pledge right now. U.S. State Terror 9/11, The Politics of Permanent War, the two-hour video, as well as Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed by Ralph Schoeman. The video portion of this package is a presentation given by Ralph Schoeman at Seton Hall University late in 2002, just a few months ago. For a pledge of $125 on your Visa or MasterCard, 212-209-2950.
We want to thank Michael G. For all the wondrous work he has done throughout the years and in helping us with Taking Aim. As well, we want to thank Matthew Finch, the public affairs director, who's been doing double duty engineering in New York. We also have an engineers over at KPFA in Berkeley. As many of you know, we're based in California. It is unusual for a station such as WBAI to produce a program that's out of its region, and we have to really thank all of you at WBAI, all the staff, and all of you, our listeners, for making this possible. We are so connected with the people in New York. Actually, we're from New York originally, so we really enjoy being remaining in, you know, together at producing and keeping WBAI on the air. Again, I want to mention, if you didn't hear before, Lee Weedmeyer. He helps us every week in the preparation of Taking Aim programs. As you know, we have, I think, mountains and mountains of paper. We read many newspapers, and we are forever taking things off the Internet. And we thank all of you who send us references to articles. What makes Taking Aim so strong is the wide range of information that we present to you, the little-known facts that you're not going to see directly in the newspapers, and also bringing it all together, not isolated pieces of information, but context and analysis. And that's particularly what you're going to get on this videotape, this 2 hours of U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. We know all of you Taking Aim listeners know what you can expect from this incredible videotape. You will get that and even more. So 212-209-2950. Ralph, I don't want to take up all the airwaves.
No, Maya, what we are seeking to do is to provide our listeners throughout the period that we are on the air with vital information about to remove the mask from the rulers of the United States, to see the real brutal power behind the facade, to expose what they do, what they intend, and the consequences thereof. It's interesting that in Iraq and Kuwait, we had documented how every administration since 1964 had prepared for what became Desert Storm, had laid the operational plans for the seizure of Arab oil, for the seizure of the resources of the region, and for the fragmentation of each country in its turn. And in this regard, the National Security Council in May of 1990 had specified Saddam Hussein as, quote, the optimum contender to replace the Warsaw Pact as the rationale for major military expenditure. It's spelled out as explicitly as that. The boogeyman, as they described it in Middle East International, January 19th, 1979, what military people call the U.S. 100,000-man quick strike force consisting of multiple divisions rapidly deployable anywhere by air, are in place. But a defense official said, we need a real boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can talk of using the quick strike force. It may turn out that boogeyman may not be defined the same in Arabic as in English. It echoes the words of Condoleezza Rice in the National Security Council when she said, on the record, we require a new Pearl Harbor, before we can expect the American people to support our plans in the Arab East. These, indeed, are the candid moments when the intentions and the plans of imperialism are disclosed, and the consequences of these plans are enormous human suffering. We described to you earlier in this special broadcast some of the consequences for the people of Indochina when the equivalent of a Hiroshima bomb in the explosive power of the saturation bombing occurred every 9 weeks in Vietnam. Brothers and sisters, in the first 4 weeks of the aerial assault upon Iraq and the Gulf War, more tonnages were dropped than during the entire Second World War in the first 4 weeks. At the time, Iraq was a small country of 17 million people, its population concentrated for the most part in cities. The sorties followed every 15 minutes. There were over 100,000 of these. 100,000 airstrikes. The tonnages, which were so massive, include fiendish weapons of chemical and biological character. Fiendish weapons that, in fact, are characterized by a napalm variant called Incendogel that burns with intense heat and sticks to anything it touches and causes terrible casualties. When used in the proximity of its intended targets, quote, one of its chief values, is its ability to deplete the air of oxygen. The waves of napalm-fueled fire remove so much oxygen from the air that the victims suffocate. These are reports at the time from Time magazine.
And this was reported in Iraq and Kuwait, A History Suppressed, which is part of our premium, our thank you to all of you who contribute to WBAI. That, along with U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, videotape, two-hour videotape, thanks to Joe Friendly for putting that together. That's 212-209-2950 for a $125 contribution to your station, WBAI. We also, as a gift to you, have prepared, Pamela Summers has, as I said, put up a website for Taking Aim at www.wbaifree.org/taking aim. And through that, you can connect to an archive of WBAI programs. What Price Genocide, Shock and Awe, The Leveling of Iraq, In Their Sights, The Global Class War Targets Working People, Smoke and Mirrors, Pretext for Permanent War, Police State America, Why War, Without Restraint, Torture, Assassination, and the Lethal Nature of Class Rule, Material Omission, U.S. Cover Story for the Assault on Iraq, The Trojan Horse, United Nations Role in Iraq, these and very more, and more, such as Blank Check, The Breakup of Iraq, Seize Oil, Preventive Strike, and Permanent War, Block to Block, House to House, and Peace Soup of Deception. These are shows that we have put on Taking Aim in the past months, only on BAI. Listeners, please, this is the moment. 212, brothers and sisters, 212-209-2950. zero.
Well, Ralph and Maya, as you can hear, the phones ringing in the background. The people are responding. The folks that are listening to this broadcast, this special edition of Taking Aim with Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone, are really responding. And we thank you so very, very much for believing in listener sponsorship right in the center of the FM dial. Taking Aim with Ralph Shoman and Maya Shone has been on since this afternoon at 3 p.m., and you have been, there has been a steady stream of phone calls coming in. So we're going to go back now to another clip from the presentation given by Ralph Shoman at Seton Hall University, and we'll be back with you in about 12 minutes or so. But do take this opportunity to make your calls to WBAI, listener-sponsored radio, commercial-free radio. U.S. State Terror 9/11, the politics of permanent war, for a pledge of $125, a two-hour video, as well as the booklet Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed by Ralph Shoman. We'll go back, and we will be back in just a moment. This is 99.5 FM WBAI, radio for peace and justice.
Are overwhelming that this particular operation was not merely known to the United States authorities, but the authorities were complicit in these events. MSNBC reported that Russian President Vladimir Putin told NBC that his government had provided the United States a warning in the strongest possible terms, and I'm quoting, for weeks of imminent attacks on airports and government buildings in the United States, and Russian newspapers reported that Russian intelligence had spelled out for the U.S. government the specifics of the attacks, identifying 25 pilots specifically trained for what were designated in the Russian press as suicide missions. In France, Reuters reported that an Islamic militant in receipt of French intelligence reports linking him to these events disclosed that they were long known to U.S. authorities. A French radio station described them in advance. The Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung, the largest newspaper in Germany, made a similar report of this information in the hands of German intelligence authorities. It becomes apparent everybody in the world had this intelligence. All the intelligence agencies were picking up on something that was being planned in a not very secret fashion, alerting the U.S. government about it on the assumption that it was not aware of what all these other governments and their intelligence agents were apparently so easily able to detect. The Times News Network reports that the United States administration, courtesy of the Russians, has very specific information about all of the movements of Osama bin Laden through its echelon electronic spying apparatus. This small group of 200 people in bin Laden were monitored. They couldn't break wind without it. CIA intelligence operatives used to joke about how every time these people spoke or moved, or it was all translated immediately into communiques. And the instructive thing about this is that they had penetrated every single component of these groups that they had established in the first place. On October 12, 2001, James Intelligence Review published a report in Russian that Moscow's permanent mission at the United Nations had submitted a meticulously detailed report to the United Nations Security Council of the planned attacks of September 11th, 6 months before, James Intelligence Review. So what are we dealing with here? Two of the people who are accused of being involved with the hijackers were on an FAA and FBI watch list, supposed to be the people who were involved with the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania, until it was disclosed that these people had been informants for the Central Intelligence Agency. They moved around at will in the United States. They bought tickets in their own names. The FAA and the FBI never bothered to inform the airlines, American Airlines, that people who had links to Osama bin Laden were on a high security watch list, never delivered to the airlines. They hijacked their flight from Dulles International Airport without any impediment, without the airlines themselves, which is standard operational procedure, being advised. They reserved their tickets in their names for the Los Angeles-bound flight that crashed into the Pentagon. Khalid al-Mitar and Nawad al-Hamzi were known to federal law enforcement authorities, according to the Los Angeles Times, writing on the 20th of September, because they had long cooperated with U.S. law enforcement authorities, says the Los Angeles Times. A very strange depiction of what occurred at Logan International Airport in Boston also appears in the papers. The Los Angeles Times described how the presumptive hijackers took a puddle jumper from Maine to Logan International Airport. You know how often those flights are delayed, postponed? Huh? Conspirators about to undertake a major undertaking, years in preparation. They take a puddle jumper to Logan. They were going there to seize airplanes and fly them into the World Trade Center. They drove into the parking lot in Logan International Airport, when lo and behold, somebody went and took the parking space they wanted. So these guys stop their car, get out of the car, and get into a pissing contest with this fellow and start abusing him in heavily Arabic-inflected English. Just what you'd expect conspirators to do, right? They made such a menacing display that he called the police. So the police came. Now they'd moved on, but their car hadn't. So what do they find in the car? Luggage with airline uniforms. A video of commercial aircraft. A suicide note. Directions to their hotel room. Do you remember at the time of the Kennedy execution, the many false Oswalds they planted? They had this guy going before Bolton Ford and saying, "I'm just back from defecting to the Soviet Union. I'm thinking about shooting the President of the United States." I mean, this stuff has the hands of intelligence all over it. A false trail, prepared in the most blatant manner, has all the earmarks of intelligence disinformation. David Weiss is an author who for many years specialized in writing about the Central Intelligence Agency, about intelligence operations, and he wrote an article in the Los Angeles Times called Omens of Terror. Quote, "Three separate instances in the 1990s foretold precisely how operatives would use airliners to strike at American targets." And he detailed three separate instances in which airplanes were to be deployed as flying bombs to target buildings and people. Operations which he stated were rehearsed and well known United States intelligence, he writes in the Los Angeles Times. What we're in the presence of is an enormous amount of data that shows that Washington and the intelligence agencies in the United States were not caught by surprise about anything. The Jerusalem Post carried an article that Mossad officials traveled to Washington in the previous month to discuss with the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI an operation involving buildings being attacked by airplanes in the United States, specifically in New York and Washington. This is a report in the London Sunday Telegraph, but it's not only there. The Israeli newspaper Yedioth Ahronot published an article in which it detailed how the Israeli intelligence agency, the Shabak, informed Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister, that his travel plans to come to New York to participate in the Zionist festival on the 11th of September would have to be delayed. He shouldn't travel on that day, the Shabak told him. And Aharon Birney, the commentator of the newspaper, remarked that the Shabak prevented Sharon from traveling because the Prime Minister's office had not been given the specific timing date for the assault. The newspaper in Israel, Haaretz, disclosed the Federal Bureau of Investigation has arrested 5 Israeli Mossad operatives 4 hours after the attack on the Twin Towers, filming the smoking skyline from the roof of their company's building, as the article describes it. The FBI arrested the 5 because they were caught videotaping the event for which they had been in waiting the entire day. The Sunday Telegraph report stipulates that Israeli intelligence officials had full details. Well, Fox News would do a 4-part series about what it called the white van and Operation Odido and the urban moving company, which were Mossad cutouts. They were in preparation to film the attacks on the World Trade Center. When the Fox News investigative series appeared, it was followed up by a report on ABC's 2020, Operation Odigo, the white van. And what was disclosed was that all telephonic communications in the United States are monitored and controlled and serviced by an Israeli company called Amdocs, which in turn controls Converse, which is part of electronic spying the agency, the Central Intelligence Agency in this country, based in Israel, monitored and run by the Mossad. Over 200 Israeli operatives, ABC's report discloses, 60 of them assigned to Hollywood, Florida, where they were in close contact with Mohammed Atta and al-Ghamdi, 4 of them living in the house 2 houses down from Mohammed Atta. We're dealing with something here that is very clearly not consistent with the official fiction. On the anniversary of 9/11, Richard Bernstein in the New York Times published an important article in which he stated that the linchpin for the explanation and the understanding of 9/11 was the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. And the reason for that, he said, was that Mohammed Atta had liaised with Ramzi Youssef in Malaysia, and that both had actually at one time visited Osama bin Laden. And he said, Mohammed Atta is the boss.
Listening to Ralph Schoenman with U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War, a talk he gave at Seton Hall University, October 31st, 2002. This two-hour special prepared by Joe Friendly for WBAI is part of our premium $125 support for Taking Aim and WBAI. That, along with the incredibly documented Iraq and Kuwait History Suppressed. That's 212-209-2950. We've only had time during our three-hour special today to play a bit of this program. We know you're going to want to see the entire videotape, not only see it once. See it many times. Share it with your friends and your family. Remember, it's our gift to you. It's WBAI's gift to you for your support. Now, we shouldn't need gifts. Everyone knows WBAI is our station. But we like to give something special back to all the people who support WBAI. 212-209-2950. You've been wonderful. You've been keeping the phones off the hook. Keep it up. We have only a few minutes left, and we will not be on next week. This is your one and only chance to support WBAI by supporting Taking Aim. And this is your one and only chance to get this incredible videotape, U.S. State Terror 9/11 and the Politics of Permanent War, brothers and sisters, as only you, the listeners to Taking Aim, No, Ralph Schoenman puts it all together. Ralph.
Thank you, Maya, but I wanted to remind our listeners that the information that we provide is a roadmap to the real intent of this ruthless ruling class. The Glasgow Sunday Herald, on the 22nd of September 2002, ran an important story with the headline, Unveiled, the Thugs Bush Wants in Place of Saddam. Now, brothers and sisters, how many times have we had to suffer the prattling of the Condoleezza Rices and the Bushes and the Ashcrofts and the Rumsfelds and all their stooges and what can we call them, the imperial pimps of American journalism, prattling on about the restoration, as they call it, of democracy in Iraq. That very democracy that they destroyed with the counter-revolutionary putsch through the murder of Abulkarim Qasim by Saddam Hussein himself, their man in Baghdad. And what does the Glasgow Sunday Herald disclose but the point men for ruling Iraq under the General Tommy Frank's colonial dictate are ex-General Nizar al-Khazraji, who David Mack of the U.S. State Department described as having the right ingredients for being the future leader under our control in Iraq. Well, who is al-Khazraji? He was the Iraqi chief of staff from 1980 to 1991. He was involved in attempting to rectify the border of Kuwait. And furthermore, the Human Rights Watch established that 100,000 Kurds in 4,000 villages were murdered and killed by Khazraji on behalf of the regime. And not only was Khazraji involved in these activities.
Let's have a little suspense. 212-209-2950. Every one of those 12 phones off the hook, and we will go on to the next despot that General Tommy Franks and Secretary of State Colin Powell and President George Bush and Vice President Dick Cheney have in mind to rule in Iraq. 212-209-2950.
We really want to thank Joe Friendly for making this available to us this afternoon to the listeners of WBAI and the audience of Taking Aim. Thanks very much, Joe, efforts this afternoon. We're getting calls coming in from Yonkers, New York, that is. Looks like an R here. Yonkers, New York. John in Yonkers, thank you very much. Mildred in River Edge, New Jersey. Let's see. Erickson in Patterson, New Jersey. Trevor from New York City. Baron from Port Washington, New York. 212-209-2950. Dwight from Brooklyn, New York. Kenneth from Montclair, New Jersey. Brian from, I believe it's Northport, New York. Julian from Irvington, New Jersey. A lot of calls coming in from Irvington and in the New Jersey listening area. Lakewood, New Jersey, south of us here at 212-209-2950. Chris from Milford, Connecticut. Zenam from Brooklyn, New York. Thank you very much. Harriet from Little Neck, New York. 212-209-2950. Jersey City, New Jersey, calling in. Charles, thank you very much. Michelle from New York. And Lewis from Bridgeport, Connecticut, all calling in with a subscription. I believe it's they're calling it in tally the TA package, the Taking Aim package, for a pledge of $125. U.S. State Terror 9/11, the politics of permanent war, the 2-hour video, as well as Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed by Ralph Schoenman. 212-209-2950. Ralph, wasn't it President Bush that said in his State of the Union address that the reason he felt we had to disarm Saddam was because he was oblivious to public opinion?
Yes,
and,
indeed it is.
Every bit of
hypocrisy is measured in that Mortimer Snerd of the U.S. ruling class. And as a matter of fact, when he was prattling on about the restoration of freedom and democracy, the liberation of Iraq, he wasn't telling the American people that it was al-Khazraji who was, in fact, the point man for the attack upon the Kurdish population in Iraq, which Bush also holds up as a crime. Of course, Bush lies about that, too, when he speaks about the gassing of the Kurds in Halabja, since, as the Defense Intelligence Agency analysis has demonstrated, the particular gas, the cyanide gas that was used against the Kurdish population in Halabja was Iranian gas. The American government had supplied the al-Khazraji forces with mustard gas. But here's the second point, man, that is supposed to bring liberation and democracy to Iraq under American Tommy Franks, the general who will be presiding over the seizure of Iraqi oil. None other than Brigadier General Najib al-Salahi. Salihi. Now, General Najib al-Salihi was the commander of the elite Republican Guard, and not merely that, but he carried out the suppression of the Shiite rebellion in Iraq. The Marsh Arabs, who were resisting the rule of Saddam Hussein, not as an invitation to U.S. imperialism, but as an attempt to regain what had been accomplished in the National Iranian Revolution of 1958. And this figure, Najib al-Salihi, carried out the most ruthless subjugation of the Shiite population without so much as a burp coming from the bushes. And 1.5 million Shiites were disappeared and dispersed. The general in question even wrote a book called Al-Zilzal, The Earthquake, describing and taking credit for the destruction of the Shiite masses of the south of Iraq. These very individuals engaged in the suppression of the population, the point men of the Saddam Hussein regime, are now the point men of the Central Intelligence Agency to rule Iraq under Tommy Franks.
And the State Department. 212-209-2950. These are the closing moments of our three-hour broadcast of Taking Aim during the WBAI Fund Drive. U.S. State Terror, 9/11, and the Politics of Permanent War. Two-hour videotape produced and edited by Joe Friendly from lecture Ralph did at Seton Hall University, and as well, Iraq and Kuwait, a history suppressed, the important document to help you understand and prepare for organizing in the days ahead. That's a $125 contribution for WBAI. 212-209-2950. $50 is a regular membership to WBAI, and everyone in the tri-state area, it is a necessity to be a member and to keep WBAI on the air. $25 is a student and also low-income senior subscription for WBAI. The best textbook you'll ever have is your subscription to WBAI. 212-209-2950.
Ralph and
by MasterCard.
Yes, Ralph and Maya, we're just about out of time. We have about 60 seconds before we'll be going over to the evening news. We want to thank you very much for spending time with us this afternoon and putting this program together for the listeners of WBAI.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael. We'll be with you all in a couple weeks.
Yusu.